Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm good, but we're not very close to the beginning anymore. We're really scooting along.
We're not even like a third of the way in.
Yeah, but we're almost done with the good part.
We're about a quarter of the way done.
Like I said, almost done with the good parts.
That's not nice, Matt. We are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/The Simpsons Show for only $2 a month. Gain access to all of our bonus content. We have a laundry list of people to thank, Matt.
We do. I like laundry lists.
Austin Brew. Thank you, Austin.
Thank you, Austin.
Dana Parker. Thank you very much, Dana.
Dana, you rock.
Irvin Diaz. Thank you, Irvin.
Thank you, Irvin.
Finally, Michael Robinson. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you all you guys for your support. We really do appreciate it. On to this week's episode, it is 22 short films about Springfield. Episode 3F18 originally aired April 14th, 1996. Written by everyone. Richard Apple, David S. Cohen, Jonathan Collier, Jennifer Crittenden, Greg Daniels, Brent Forrester, Rachel Polito, Steve Tompkins, Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein, and Matt Groening.
There were a lot of chefs in the kitchen for this one.
Well, they were writing. It was supervised by Greg Daniels, and pretty much people were given a character or two, their favorites, to write a scene around, and the ones that were the best were included. They did have to cut a couple different scenes from this, including one. Phil Hartman is credited as a guest on this episode. There was a Lionel Hutz scene that was dropped from.
I was wondering, I don't remember him in there at all.
It was dropped. There was a larger Marge scene as well that was also dropped, and other things. Around the edges they had to cut because it ran long before they got to it. Directed by Jim Reardon, finished 73rd in the ratings, Nielsen rating of 6.9. Nice. Seventh highest rated show on Fox that week. Seventh, man.
It's funny that now The Simpsons is almost always the highest rated show on Fox.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's probably true.
Episode begins with Bart and Milhouse spitting off the overpass and then squirting mustard and ketchup off the overpass.
Into a convertible.
You have to target convertibles. That's a very important part. And this segues into what this episode is. It is a bunch of vignettes. There's no overarching plot. It is just a bunch of little tiny scenes involving a bunch of different characters. They wanted to do something that had not been done before. It's an interesting episode in that it doesn't really try and do in anything in particular. It just is like, hey, we have a bunch of characters now that we've developed over seven seasons. Let's just showcase them kind of slice of life style in a variety show. It was inspired by the Adventures of Ned Flanders at the very end of The Front, and they wanted to do an entire episode like that.
So odd. The Ned Flanders part. An episode like this is fantastic. It's you know me, I'm a sucker for side characters, and this episode is one of my favorites of all time. I would probably put it in my top 10 for sure, maybe top 5.
Whoa! Old Matt tipping his hand. We first get Apu getting invited to Sanjay is his brother or his cousin? I always forget.
His brother.
Brother.
Definitely brother.
Yeah, that's right, because it's his nephew. Okay. And Apu hates leaving work, but he is willing to do it for 5 minutes, and we get him partying like it's on sale for $19.99.
For the next 5 minutes, I'm going to party like it's on sale for $19.99. Quick, not time to cook them. They will plump in my stomach. Hello, beautiful. No ring, I see. So you are only arranged to be married. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I love this song. Let us boogie. I am a freakazoid. Come on and wind me up. Whew, I am hot. Let us get out of here. Don't worry. I'll tell everybody you are untouchable. Oh, Sanjay, never have I partied so hearty. Same time next year, yeah?
Yes.
Made it. And with 1 minute to spare.
You took 4 minutes of my life, and I want them back. Oh, I'd only waste them anyway.
I didn't realize we'd be putting entire clips in here.
It was a struggle with this episode because I didn't know what to include, so I just did the parts that I liked the most.
Yeah.
So I got that's a poo eating a tofu dog, drinking a beer, dancing, theoretically having sex, falling in the pool, and then getting back to work within 4 minutes.
That's pretty impressive, I got to say, because you don't know how far away Sanjay's was. Maybe Sanjay was really far away, so, you know.
I'm going to say it's pretty close if he managed to do all that within 4 minutes and get there and back. Also, it made me think very briefly, if 8 people fell in a pool now all at once, that's 8 destroyed phones.
We're getting better at it. The latest crop of cell phones is pretty good in terms of water resistance. But yeah, that's that. Oh my God, that'd be terrible. I'd cry.
I've had that happen. Then we segue over to Lisa, who gets gum in her hair, thrown in her hair from Bart. Who, first of all, why is Bart throwing gum in the recycling? That's not Bart. Come on. That's not where gum goes. No. You don't recycle.
Marge is a terrible person. That's we know true. That.
But Lisa gets gum in her hair, and Marge decides to use, instead of just focusing on a home remedy to get gum out of her hair, she decides to use all of them all at the same time.
Well, to be fair, they go one at a time, and none of them seem to work.
Well, I looked it up. Peanut butter actually is a prescribed home remedy to get gum out. You just
really anything with oil.
Yeah, exactly. Vegetable oil is also. You just got to let it sit for a while. But Marge gives it exactly 8 seconds and then throws mayonnaise on there and then horseradish. There's a bunch of stuff gets added on as they go. Next, and then Lisa has to sit in the yard and get ambushed by, I guess, horseflies. Or no, they're bees. They're bees. She mentions horseflies later on, but we see that they're bees because one of the bees flies off of her and over to Smithers and Mr. Burns, who are cycling in the park.
Smithers? What's the meaning of this slacking off?
There's a bee in my eye, sir.
And?
I'm allergic to bee stings. They cause me to, die.
But we're running out of forward momentum.
Perhaps you could paddle for just a little while, sir.
Quite impossible. I can try to bat him off if you like.
Really, that's... Oh.
Holy cats, man, we're starting to wobble.
Get me to a hospital. You have to paddle.
Go, Tuttle Sunday Trousers. Fear not. I'll get you to a hospital. The only way I know how. Smithers, you infernal ninny, stick your left hoof on that flange now! Now, if you can get it through your bug-addled brain, jam that second mephitic clodhopper of yours on the right doodad. Now pump those scrawny chicken legs, you stuporous funker! One more jostle, you wretched shirkaday.
That's when they collapse in the hospital and they take Mr. Burns in instead of...
Well, obviously, he's the one who needs it. Smithers just looks drunk, as we'll find out.
Yeah. All those words that Burns used are real words. They pulled them from a old-timey thesaurus. So...
Old-timey thesaurus, I love it.
Yeah, like 19th century vocabulary book, basically. Then we get to Dr. Nick. It's time to shine. He throws some change at Smithers, because obviously Smithers needs a drink. And he has his malpractice hearing, where he has done probably incalculable damage to his patients. But just as they're about to render their verdict, Grandpa Simpson has decided that he needs a quack and he needs it right away. Dr. Nick... It calms him down by telling him his skeleton is trying to jump out of his body. Because, of course.
Well, that's what happens to skeletons if you don't have a quack nearby.
Yeah, Nick fixes the problem by giving him transdental electromicide, which means electrocuting Grandpa in the mouth. That's what that means. But that fixes the problem, and Dr. Nick is applauded for saving the day once again, the only way the way that only he can. Then we cut over to Mo and Barney, who are, you know, doing their normal thing at Mo's. Mo has calculated Barney's beer tab.
Remember when I said I'd have to send away to NASA to calculate your bar tab?
Oh, yeah. We all had a good laugh, Mo.
The results came back today. You owe me $70 billion. No, wait. That's for the Voyager spacecraft. Your tab's $14 billion.
Well, all I got is $2,000.
Well, that's halfway there.
Huh, freeze, dude. Move a muscle and I'll blow this wino's head off.
Ah, I'm behind 3 inches of bulletproof glass. Do your worst.
All right.
No, stay out of there. Stay out of there. Oh, good God, no.
Oh, goodbye, student loan payments.
Come back here, you stinking... Hey, I wonder how much air is in here.
Hey. Oh, Mo.
Mo loses all his money to Snake. So Snake's gone to college.
Obviously. I mean, yeah, I assume it's... in a future episode, we'll find out he went to community college for computers to get into computer fraud.
Okay. Okay, good. I was trying to remember, like, I know they go into some detail, but of course, that's why you're here, Matt, because you know these things.
Yes, because I have watched all the episodes through season, like, 16 a hojillion times, and I'm working my way through the other ones as well.
Hojillion?
Hojillion, yes.
How much is that?
That's a little bit more than a sextillion.
Okay. With that, we go to commercial.
And when we come back, we start out with what may be the best little segment of the entire thing. We get
Matt,
Skinner.
Matt, this is not up for debate. It is the best. It's not. This is
okay,
not.
Okay.
I'm not. I don't.
I was just trying to, you know, couch it a little bit.
You don't need to hedge your bets on this one. I'm like, this Skinner and Chalmers is spectacular.
Indeed. We see that Principal Skinner has having Superintendent Chalmers over for dinner. And things start out not going well because poor Principal Skinner goes to the kitchen and finds out that his burgers that he has, or I don't know, his roast, sorry, is burning. It's terrible. And Superintendent Chalmers comes in, catches Skinner about to run out the window because he's planning to get replacement food from Krusty Burger. And we get a theme song.
Skinner with his crazy explanations, the superintendent's gonna need his medication. When he hears Skinner's lame exaggerations, there'll be trouble in town tonight.
Seymour!
Now, I know after our little recent Twitter conversation that people think I don't like fun, but theme songs are fun, and that one was amazing. It really beats the later Professor Frink one quite handily.
Oh, come on, man. I'm not going to take that Frink hate.
It's not Frink hate. I'm just saying he never got a chance to produce a good version.
There you go, Frink hate. That's what I'm hearing here, Frink hate. Professor Frink's just trying his best, and you gotta poo-poo him. I see how it works.
After the theme song is over, Principal Skinner lies his way out saying that, oh, that's not smoke coming out of the oven, that's steam for their steamed clams they'll be having. And he is apparently a convincing enough liar that Chalmers buys it and goes back into the other room. Principal Skinner then hops out the window, runs to Krusty Burger, comes back, puts him on a very nice plate. It's actually very interesting because it's just, he lays it out like it's a nice burger that he made himself. And, of course, things don't really go that well when he introduces this to Chalmers.
Superintendent, I hope you're ready for mouth-watering hamburgers.
I thought we were having steamed clams.
No, I said steamed hams. That's what I call hamburgers.
You call hamburgers steamed hams?
Yes, it's a regional dialect.
What region?
Upstate New York.
Really? Well, I'm from Utica, and I've never heard anyone use the phrase steamed hams.
Oh, not in Utica. No, it's an Albany expression.
I see.
Yes. Chalmers sees, and then proceeds to question Skinner about why they call it steamed hams, despite the fact that they're grilled. And I really should have captured this entire thing, but I didn't know we were allowed to capture entire bits.
What do you mean allowed, man? I'm not your supervisor.
That's right. You're not my supervisor. Anyway, at this point, Skinner basically runs off to the kitchen and then comes back pretending like he's tired and it's time for Chalmers to leave. Of course, Chalmers being at this point probably really weirded out, sort of agrees. But Skinner, being the easily distracted person he is, never actually turned the oven off. So unfortunately, the rest of the house is on fire.
Oh, well, that was wonderful. Good time was had by all. I'm pooped.
Yes, I should be. Good Lord, what is happening in there?
Aurora Borealis?
Aurora Borealis. At this time of year, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within your kitchen.
Yes.
Mash it?
No.
It's funny, I've seen this episode over a dozen times, and it's still hilarious every time that skit hit.
Now, this segment, Skinner and Chalmers segment, should be in the Smithsonian. It is...
It really should.
It is a... Like, I am not as big a fan as this entire episode as Matt is, but this segment in particular is a masterpiece of comedy. It is... Skinner...
It's everything a bad sitcom is.
It is everything that a bad sitcom is. Just misunderstanding after misunderstanding after misunderstanding where... And Skinner tells Chalmers 13 lies in a row. This is what this segment is. Skinner
13, wow.
Skinner lies to Superintendent Chalmers 13 times, and Chalmers believes every single lie. And it so expertly skewers that really lame sitcom premise of, oh, you know, all we have to do is just lie about because we're it's Seinfeld. This is like a Seinfeld skit.
Oh,
this
Lord,
is
yeah.
This is Curb Your Enthusiasm. This is like all you have to do is just fess up one time and it doesn't, but instead it goes crazy. And I don't know. It's beautiful. It is
the lies build on other lies, and this is this it works for The Simpsons.
So it is. It's unbelievable. I could just watch it all day long on a loop, and I don't think I'd ever get tired of it. We could probably spend time just expertly just deconstructing every single word in this thing, but it's spectacular. It's so good.
It is an amazing economy of language to get across this amount of information and comedy in such a short period of time.
And they say, and nothing in it is important. There's not one vital piece of information in this thing. There's nothing that is communicated about either of the characters that is important. You don't learn anything.
Well, I don't think you learn anything about most characters in this particular episode of The Simpsons.
I don't know. You learn a little bit about... I think Mo and his love of money and his escape room, and you learn about Apu's party habits. You
it's
learn.
True.
I don't know. I'm just rambling at this point.
Yeah, who Bowman actually is? You learn a snake has student loan debts. I guess so. You're right.
You're very important information.
Yeah. But once we pull away from Skinner and Chalmers, we go to Homer, who is walking home one day and decides to get a newspaper after he sees Holmes calls for donut tax. Was that based on a politician at the time, or is that just a...
I think that was just like, what's one thing that would make Homer buy a newspaper?
Gotcha. Sorry, I wasn't sure if they were trying to reference an actual politician. But Homer has Maggie in his hands and tries to juggle getting a newspaper with not putting her down. And of course, Homer being Homer somehow manages to put Maggie in the newspaper dispenser and then has no more change left to get her back out. He attempts to pull her out and actually yanks off her clothes. After that, Maggie rolls herself in a newspaper showing the article "Deadbeat Dad Beat Dead," which, first of all, fantastic headline. And second of all, it's enough to put a little bit of fear in Homer. He attempts to send the dog for help by writing a message in cheese on a paper bag and putting it in the dog's collar, which of course is immediately eaten by the dog because it's a dog. So Homer just decides to take the whole newspaper dispenser. This is a pretty short one. There's only about four lines in the entire thing, but it works out pretty well. Homer gets a lot of newspapers, and someday someone will come along with a quarter so he can get his daughter out, hopefully before she gets hungry or has to go to the bathroom. Ugh. But, you know, newspapers, they're fine. We go from Homer and Maggie to a Pulp Fiction riff, which is basically the cops are eating a Krusty Burger and have the conversation from Pulp Fiction about the McDonald's in France, but about Springfield.
You know, I went to the McDonald's in Shelbyville on Friday night.
A McWhat?
A McDonald's restaurant. I never heard of it either, but they have over 2,000 locations in this state alone.
Must have sprung up overnight.
You know the funniest thing, though? It's the little differences.
Example?
Well, at McDonald's, you can buy a Krusty Burger with cheese, right? But they don't call it a Krusty Burger with cheese.
Get out. Well, what do they call it?
A Quarter Pounder with cheese.
Quarter Pounder with cheese? Well, I can picture the cheese, but, do they have crusty, partially gelatinated, non-dairy gum-based beverages?
Mm-hmm. They call them shakes.
Shakes. I don't know what you're getting.
Well, I know what I'm getting. Some donuts.
So,
you didn't include them forking the bench so that Chief Wiggum could escape?
No, it's really more of a visual joke. But yes, they have to basically deflate the booth that he's in to get Chief Wiggum out. Because as I think we pointed out before, I'm pretty sure Chief Wiggum is by far the heaviest person in Springfield.
He's 5'6 and is a size 52 waist.
Yeah, that's pretty up there.
That's really bad. this is not the only... I mean, this is the only one that I think... I mean, obviously, the scene later on with Herman and Chief Wiggum and Snake is also direct reference to Pulp Fiction, but the entire kind of structure of this episode is also very similar to that. You know, it's a bunch of these seemingly unrelated vignettes that kind of connect just because they're in
the
same place.
They connect.
Yeah.
Involving the similar characters, but they're kind of unstuck in time.
So this scene posits that McDonald's exists in The Simpsons.
And it's as popular as it is because they have 2,000 locations in whatever state that Springfield is in. So it's at least as popular as it is in the real world.
So the real world exists. It just doesn't exist in Springfield.
Although we have seen Krusty is apparently extremely popular even outside of Springfield, internationally so. So
in some places.
I have to imagine there are Krusty Burgers. Maybe Krusty Burger is the Burger King analog.
Maybe.
Instead of the McDonald's
analog. Maybe there's only Krusty Burgers in Springfield and in France.
Maybe. Anyway, at this point we cut to the Bumblebee Man. He's walking home. Basically, he has had a very rough day at work. This is all in Spanish, but it's very pronounced Spanish.
It's not all in Spanish.
Well,
the language they are speaking is sort of Spanish, but when
it's true, it's using Spanish words, but not the particularly correct sentence structure.
No, it's taking English cognates and making them Spanish, sort of Spanish
yes.
words. It's not really Spanish. I'm fairly certain they take there's maybe six actual Spanish words in what Bumblebee Man says, and the rest of it is kind of Spanglish that we could understand.
No, I'm pretty sure almost all of the words are actually Spanish, because a few of them I actually looked up to translate. They're just, he doesn't use them in a way you would in an actual sentence. It's more like phrases. He's not saying that, oh, I got hit in the head with a ball in a baseball game. He says something about hit head and baseball. It's just it's Spanish words used incorrectly. But, you know, most of the words are actually Spanish. But poor Bumblebee Man's life is apparently full of physical comedy in addition to his career, because he gets a whole bunch of oranges on the head. He has a very yappy chihuahua. His house falls down and he is then served with divorce papers by his wife. So poor Bumblebee Man has pretty much one of the worst days you can imagine, where everyone ends up alive at the end.
Well, I mean, if his wife already had divorce papers on hand, I don't think it was I don't think they're doing too well to begin with.
No, but it's just that seems to really pile on. You think she'd have been like, well, maybe I shouldn't show him the papers today since he's had the house collapse on him. But, you know, that's just a quick vignette for Bumblebee Man. Next, we get to a far more interesting story wherein Chief Wiggum is running or is walking down the side of the street with a whole bunch of donuts, and Snake sees him. Snake is, of course, scared.
He
has lots of warrants.
Well, he just stole money. I mean, he just robbed Moe's.
That's
sure
true.
He's probably nervous about the cops on the lookout for him.
Probably. And of course, Chief Wiggum looks at him and says, "Hey, I know you," which of course doesn't mean he actually knows who Snake is, just he's seen him before. So Snake runs him over, but then Snake crashes into the side of the road. Gets out of the car. Chief Wiggum chases him down, which is an amazing feat, given Chief Wiggum's physical state. They basically have a knockdown, drag-out fight that gets him all the way into Herman's. And Herman is waiting with a shotgun. And at that point, we cut away because Herman has now taken Chief Wiggum and Snake hostage. We get to see Reverend Lovejoy, who is encouraging his dog to poop on Flanders' lawn. I thought it was really mean that he condemns the dog to hell for doing exactly what the dog was told. That just seems, you know, wrong.
I mean, Reverend Lovejoy is not the most upstanding individual.
But he's really not. He's in the religion for the power.
It's not really nice to have your dog poop on people's lawn, regardless of who they are, especially Flanders. Flanders is a nice guy. What did Flanders do to Lovejoy?
He annoys him with questions at all hours of the day and night.
I know,
about
but
minuscule well, things.
Guess what? You're a reverend. That's what you invite upon yourself.
That's true. I don't think Lovejoy should have been a reverend.
No.
It's not the perfect career for him.
It doesn't seem like it's one he's this well suited for.
No. But after Ned says he'll have to go get his old snow shovel from Homer to pick up the dog poop, we see that Marge and Lisa are still working on Lisa's hair. At that point, they have tried, and this is an exhaustive list, peanut butter, mayonnaise, olive oil, lemon juice, tartar sauce, chocolate syrup, gravy, bacon fat, hummus, and baba ganoush. Why they chose all those random things, I couldn't tell you. But Ned, of course, suggests that they freeze it.
Hey, Matt.
Hmm.
I've got an idea for next season's trivia wager.
No, nothing more with food. I'm tired of food.
Peanut butter, mayonnaise, olive oil, lemon juice, tartar sauce, chocolate syrup, gravy, bacon fat, hummus, and baba ganoush. That sounds really delicious.
As a shampoo?
No, as a yummy food product.
No more eating things in wagers. I'm tired of wasting delicious food on your crazy ideas.
We'll see. We'll see.
At this point, Ned suggests that they freeze it and hit it with a hammer, because apparently that works for him on his mustache, which sounds like the worst idea ever to do.
Ned Flanders is a lunatic if he does that. If he freezes his mustache and then smashes it, that's so close to your face. How? That's crazy. It's crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy, man.
It's absolutely insane. As we find out, that it doesn't work. It just mashes more hair into the gum. At this point, other people start to show up to make their suggestions. I'm not sure who suggests chewing. Groundskeeper Willie suggests that chewing gum has to be chewed out, which is stupid. The sea captain suggests a Baltic squid. Sideshow Mel very handily and correctly says you shouldn't try to get it out with a bone, because apparently it's still stuck in his hair. Uter's father is apparently the foreman at the Dusseldorf Gum Works, which, okay, sure, Uter. But basically, this act ends with everyone in the town coming in to offer their suggestions on getting gum out.
And this is all those people who didn't make it in their other scenes. This is basically
exactly.
their solution was like, we'll just have them all in this one. And
that's the end of the act.
Oh, what happens?
We fade to black.
And?
That's it?
We go to commercial.
Oh, yeah, sorry, we go to commercial.
Thank you very much.
My bad.
I need that. I need it.
Well, I watched these. There are no commercials, so yeah.
Matt, in the world of normal television that The Simpsons existed in 1996, they went to commercials.
That's true.
Unless they recorded it on their VCR. When we come back, we get Cletus and his theme song.
Some folk will never raise a skunk, but then again, some folk will, like Cletus, the slack-jawed yokel.
Hey, what's going on this side?
Oh, Cleet. And I think this is actually the most superior theme song in this episode. I think it's better than Skinner's theme song.
Really? You think so? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I think it's better
than Skinner's. We'll have to agree to disagree on this one.
Well, I can agree to be right. You can agree to be wrong. We get Cletus trying to give shoes to his wife, Brandine. They'll scuff up the topless dance and runway, so she has to decline them. Cletus returns them whence they came, waiting until someone with a woman with less discriminating tastes. Those are ugly shoes as well, I do want to say.
True, but they'd go perfect on the topless dancing runway.
I don't think they would. He yells at his ma because he can see her, because she's on top of a roof. I don't know. Then we get back to comic book guy, who Milhouse needs to pee, so he's just running into every store, and he buys a comic to go to so he can use the bathroom. Kirk drags him out because he thinks he's just buying comics. Then they get to Herman's, where Chief Wiggum and Snake are just tied up and gagged straight up in the middle of the store. Was the store even closed?
Who knows? I mean, they could have barged in anyway. They saw the lights were on.
I guess so. Milhouse runs into the bathroom and Kirk tries to make conversation while Chief Wiggum and Snake are just sitting there. It's really great. Chief, they're both like mumbling and trying to get his attention. He's trying to do his best to ignore this extremely awkward situation. And Herman finally decides, no, we can't let this man leave. And, is about to tie him up as well, but then Milhouse knocks him out with a flail.
Well, yeah, you know, kids, expertly wielded
flail. Lisa gets a real person haircut to get rid of the gum. And it's true. I think it's really funny that, it works in both ways in that children's haircuts are also not often real person haircuts.
Yeah.
So she can say that, and it can make sense in continuity, in universe.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, yes, she gets a real haircut instead of the weird cartoon haircuts that she has and all of her family members have. Nelson laughs at her as she leaves, even though she has self-confidence, and then he laughs, the typical ha-ha. Then he laughs at, who is it that falls down? It's not Mrs. Glick. It's an old lady. Is it Agnes? Is it Mrs. Glick?
I think it is Agnes, yeah.
Is it Agnes?
I'm pretty sure it's Agnes. Could be wrong.
It's an old lady. She falls over. He laughs. Then he laughs at a very tall man in a tiny car. And that is a mistake on Nelson's part.
Do you find something comical about my appearance when I'm driving my automobile?
Yeah.
Everyone needs to drive a vehicle, even the very tall. This was the largest auto that I could afford. Should I, therefore, be made the subject of fun?
I guess so.
Would you like it if I laughed at your misfortune? Huh? Maybe we should find out. Now, march. Hey, everybody, look at this. It's that boy who laughs at everyone. Let's laugh at him. Wave to the people. Blow them kisses.
Wow.
Well, Milhouse, I guess interesting stuff does happen to people in Springfield.
Yep. Everybody in town's got their story to tell. There's just not enough time to hear them all.
And so we get a nice little warm, you know, hey, the moral of the story is that Springfield's a wide place and we're learning all about them. Unfortunately, the aforementioned Professor Frink tries to get in his story before the time runs out.
Oh, sorry I'm late. There was trouble at the lab with the running and the exploding and the crying. One of the monkeys stole the glasses off my head. Well, oh, no, wait, please. No, please, I have a funny story. If you listen, I even wrote theme music. There, listen. Hey, Professor Frink will make you laugh, will make you think. He likes to run, and then the thing with the person. Oh, boy, that monkey is going to pay.
That monkey is going to pay.
I like that kind of like little dark turn there at the end. That monkey's going to pay. And what's wrong?
Yep.
Why the hate on Professor Frink, Matt? He's doing his best.
I'm not saying that. He didn't get a chance to have the best representation of his theme song. I'm sure it could have been good.
Could have been good. So it's bad.
It could have been amazing.
So it's bad, and you hate Professor Frink. Got it.
Yep, that's exactly what it was. Okay, good job.
Thank you.
You ferreted me out.
Oh, that's all I got to do. I just got to, you gotta hammer people when you try and think they're lying. You got to make sure that you get the truth. It's important. It's a fun episode, an episode that really builds on all these characters and does very fun and creative things with them. It gives us a little insight into it. It is a world building episode in some ways. It feels like it makes Springfield feel as like a cohesive place that you don't always see, but it's always there.
It's true. It's one of those things where like you get to basically learn more about other people in the background. So the next time they show up as a side character or something, you know a little bit more about their motivations.
Yeah. And it, I don't know, the Skinner Chalmers scene in itself is Hall of Fame worthy to me, but it's not in my top 10, but it's very funny. It's very well written and well crafted. It's a unique thing you don't see in most kinds of television shows. You know, they don't do like an entire episode where there's real no plot. It's just all the characters.
I'm pretty sure most Seinfeld episodes could be classified as no plot.
That's not true whatsoever. They say that
I know.
Seinfeld's not about nothing. There's always the plots are just Seinfeld plots are, hey, people are awkward and here's watch some misanthropes go throughout the world. That's what the plot of every Seinfeld episode is.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We'll rank it at the end of the show. We do have a submission for my favorite episode.
Not surprising.
Hello, chaps. My favorite episode has to be 22 short films about Springfield. I am in absolute awe of this episode for reasons thrice. Reason the first, whilst I fully respect you guys' highly ranked episodes, which show character and emotional development, focus on the family, and are tight without pointless B-plots and tenuous segues. For me, The Simpsons have always been chiefly a comedy show, and the B-plots and side characters are my favorite parts, really what elevates the show from any other. Therefore, an entire episode composed of B-plots and side characters is as magical as finding Aurora Borealis at this time of year, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within my kitchen. Reason the second, as a child, my brother stuck gum in my hair, and whilst my experience wasn't anywhere near as funny, mayonnaise-y, or downright peanut buttery as Lisa's, I'm now sporting a healthy balding spot at the age of 32, which I'm hoping is purely coincidental. Reason the third, steamed hams! Thank you for making the best podcast ever. I was truly born to be a Simpsons fan, even to the point of my mother's name being Manjula, and I continue to cherish the opportunity to revisit and pay tribute to a show that's nothing short of genius. You already reached 105 episodes by the time I found you, and like Homer, faced with 64 slices of American cheese, I was determined to consume them all before you reached this episode. By doing this at work, I not only managed to feed in under a month, but also save my extremely annoying colleagues from my inevitable Grimy-esque meltdown for now. Anyway, cheers and keep up the good work. Now, I appreciate the pronunciation guide that was sent. I'm going to do my best to pronounce your name correctly. Upcar Baradia. Thank you, Upcar, for that submission. If you have a favorite episode, submit it to simpsonsshowpod@gmail.com explaining why a certain episode is your favorite. And I'll read it when we get to that episode. Next up, Matt, it is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news groupers are comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people are talking about when the episode debuted, what they thought about the episode primarily. Now, Matt, what do you think they thought about this one?
I don't know. I feel like this is one of those ones where you don't know what they thought. I have to assume they liked it. I mean, but they are hate incarnate, so you never know.
They've been fairly positive lately.
That's true. That's why there's a chance.
They were all. It was very, very positive. Everyone really, really liked this one. All the people on there were very, very happy with this episode. They liked the change of pace. They liked the weirdness. They liked the bits on, you know, the fact that it was so rapid fire that even if you didn't like a part, it was over before you even thought about it, and you just moved on to the next one. There's a couple people who are a little bit more negative on it, but no one hated it. Everyone at least thought it was fun.
Interesting. It's funny the types of shows that will bring people together.
Coalesce opinions?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. But that's about it for the news group this week. Nothing else super exciting. We can move on. Our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number. Yellow?
KBBL's gonna give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Your listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite Nelson quote? Tons of great answers. I always get ones that I forgot about, and they always make me laugh. First from Mark, Nelson, what can I get for 8,000 tickets? Squeaky voice teen, a BB gun or an easy bake oven? Hot food is tempting, but I just can't say no to a weapon. from Adrian, hey Bart, your epidermis is showing, which that very popular answer is your epidermis is showing. I said, ha ha. From David, turn off the noozle. The noodles. What noodles? The noozle at the end of the hoose. From Date with Density. It's great. That's another popular many submissions from Date with Density. Kevin, I don't know. Gotta nuke something. Also, that's good. from Mike from Lemon of Troy. Are you sure it wouldn't be faster to just tell us what happened? No. I said there's no time to explain, and I stick by that. From Mike, joy to the world. The teacher's dead. We barbecued her head. That stuck with me for ages, especially around the holidays. From Nancy from Barter of Darkness. Ha ha. Hey, Nelson, he's really hurt. I think he broke his leg. I said ha ha. I use this all the time when someone says a joke that may not be funny and they wait my response. I always said I said ha ha with the same tone of voice Nelson does. From Holly, the thing about Huckleberries is once you've had fresh, you'll never go back to canned. When Principal Skinner approaches, so anyway, I kicked the guy's ass. Skinner walks away. Now if the berries are too tart, I just dust them with confectioner's sugar. Which, that was also a very highly used response. From Amber, Lisa, from also David Density, Lisa, be the baby, kitty. Go on, be the baby. I believe you. I don't care. From Dave, you made me bleed my own blood. Kevin, well, la-di-da, Lady Cheaterly. From Aaron at Gioge 77, Josh 77, to Robert Goulet, your manager says for you to shut up. Vera said that? Midnight Philly at midnight on the third day. God bless you, Nelson. I'm no hero. I just like hitting people on the head. Danny, whoosh Danny H. I said ha-ha. From Smar, real Stephen Marr, to Lisa, you? Since when do you like me? No girls like me. Are you wearing a wire? A tremendous response. I can't emphasize how many was I said, ha-ha. That was very, very, very popular. Matt, what is your answer?
I hate to go with the crowd, but I said, ha-ha. It's just so quintessentially Nelson.
Yeah, it's really good. Mine is the him in Date with Density, him messing with Willie and Lisa laughing. Turn on the noozle. Yeah. What noodles?
The noodles.
Hey, Willie, catch the football. From Lisa not knowing why she's laughing. Fantastic. Lisa's just laughing at him. Next week's question. This episode clearly is referencing Pulp Fiction in many, many ways. What is your favorite film parody / reference?
Ooh, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, I'm not going to think about it. Post this question on all of our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, on Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Follow, like any of those places. You'll get random bursts of Simpsons into your life. Next up, Matt.
Uh-oh.
It's time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge. So, Matt and I will each challenge each other with 3 trivia questions, 1 easy, 1 medium, 1 hard. Try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season, Season 7. Whoever loses must at least attempt to eat 64 slices of American cheese in one sitting. I'm not out of it. I can still win.
Yes, you can. I'm having to make things extra hard just in case.
Well, fancy that, Matt, because I also made things extra hard.
Oh, no.
And you're probably still going to beat me. It doesn't matter. You ready for an easy question?
Ready.
In Mommy Beerist, Marge and Homer become co-owners of what?
Moe's Tavern.
That is correct.
All right. All right, sir. Your easy question. What establishment is Bart forced to work at in Bart After Dark?
The Burlesque House.
That is correct. The Maison Derriere. That means the back house.
Will someone please think of the children? Okay, your medium question. In Fraudcast News, what is the name of Lisa's newspaper?
Oh, Fraudcast News. That's the one where Burns buys the newspaper and hers is the only one that, I don't know, the Muckraker?
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Is the Red Dress Press.
Oh, of course. Dang it. All right. You ready for your medium question?
I'm ready.
What does Bart destroy that forces him to work at the burlesque house?
A stone gargoyle.
Ooh, well, this is not going well for me. I'm going to have to make it even harder for you next time.
I can't control you, Matt. I can only control myself.
Mm-hmm.
Your final answer. Final answer. Final question.
Mm-hmm.
Who produced the score for Prankster Rap?
The score?
The music in Prankster Rap. Who produced it?
Prankster Rap. Score. Hmm. I have no idea.
It is Boots Riley of the Coup.
Of course. How could I not know that?
I told you I was going to make them harder.
Mm-hmm. Since that really has nothing to do with The Simpsons or just you know, tangentially.
I mean, he wrote the music for that episode, Matt. What do you want me to do?
Yeah. All right. What is Marge's act that she's forced to do at the end of the episode, Bar After Dark, and who does it with her?
She does a ventriloquist dummy act with Chip.
Man, I really did not make it hard enough, apparently.
Thank you very much.
You're going to have to make these harder.
Thank you very much. That brings me up within 5 points. It is you, Matt has 69 points, and I have 64 points with exactly 4 episodes to go.
Yeah, definitely going to have to redo some of these questions. They're a bit easy for you.
Yeah, that must be it.
Mm-hmm.
We need excitement, Matt. We got to drive up the ratings. This is how you do it.
Yes, the ratings. That's what people are concerned about is our record.
We finished 7th in the ratings last week. We got to do better. Uh-huh. I've got some bonus questions for you.
Okay.
First from Brian. In The PTA Disbands, what are the names of the substitutes that fill in for Mrs. Krabappel?
Mrs. Krabappel. Marge is one of them. Mo is one of them. I have no idea who the others are.
Gabe Kaplan, Lionel Hutz, Barney, and Chief Wiggum.
Really? All of those are from Mrs. Krabappel?
You don't see them all. You only see a list with names crossed
out. Oh, that's right. The list. Gotcha. Okay.
Two more. These are from John Winchester. From Homer Defined. What does Mr. Burns prefer to call a meltdown?
An unrequested fission surplus.
That is correct. And what has Marge been donating to the canned food drive?
Oh, lima beans and pumpkin, I want to say. I don't know.
Lima beans, old lima beans and pumpkin mix.
Pumpkin mix, of course. Dang it. So close.
Let's do, you ready for a speed round, Matt?
Sure.
These are from John Richter. These are all involving the Quickie Mart.
Okay.
Who is the relative of Pooh's that occasionally fills in for him at the Quickie Mart?
Sanjay.
When Apu is fired, which famous actor is hired to replace him?
James Woods.
Who is Frosticulus, the frozen man in the Quickie Mart's freezer?
Jasper.
Who is actually the one that robbed the Quickie Mart in season one?
Sideshow Bob, yes.
Why did Apu take a job at the Quickie Mart?
To pay off his student loans.
That's correct. During the Springfield Film Festival, short film features which character getting dragged into a hot dog machine by their tie?
Chief Wiggum.
What brand new additions to the Quickie Mart are destroyed immediately after installation?
The 16 brand new gas pumps.
Correct. Bart and Milhouse buy what dangerous item from the Quickie Mart with a $20 bill?
An all syrup super squishy.
Correct. Who are frequent visitors to the garden on the roof of the Quickie Mart?
Paul and Linda McCartney.
And finally, what is the Shelbyville incarnation of the Quickie Mart called?
The Speedy Mart?
That is correct. 10 for 10.
Was really not sure about that last one.
Got it. All right. If you have a question or a theme or something you guys want to suggest and or something for me to throw at Matt, send it in. I'll try and do my best. Include it. But I think it is time for us to move on to our final segment. A segment we end every single episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show. Matt and I rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Okay, Matt. You... I said earlier, this is in your top 10, perhaps your top 5.
Indeed.
I'm not going to put it in the top 10.
Really?
No, it is not a top 10 episode.
Really? Really? Okay, let's see. Just outside of the top 10 is Marge Not Be Proud. You do not think this is better than Marge Not Be Not Proud?
No, I do not.
Wow. Okay, where would you put it then?
I would put it... probably somewhere in the neighborhood of Bart the Fink, Two Bad Neighbors, Lisa the Vegetarian.
I suppose I could see that. I definitely think it's better than Lisa the Vegetarian. Yeah, Fish Called Selma probably is better.
I mean,
I guess my sticking point is Bart the Fink. Is Bart the Fink better than this? And as much as I really love this episode, probably, just because it focuses so heavily on Krusty and you've got the good Bart-Lisa dynamic going on in it. Two Bad Neighbors, though. That's my sticking point. I'm not sure if it's better than that.
This is up to you. I think Two Bad Neighbors is better, but if you want to place it higher than Two Bad Neighbors, I'm okay with that.
I think I'm going to have to put it above Two Bad Neighbors.
Okay. So, New 15 is 22 short films about Springfield. See, that was painless. That was easy.
Mm-hmm.
Easy. I just don't... I applaud it for its comedy and for the excellent writing about all the side characters, but there's no central plot. There's nothing in here that, like... The segues are a donut floating through the sewer. That's not...
That's enough.
I'm gonna have to pull it down because of that. I'm sorry.
Robbie.
I think just there's a little bit more skill involved in writing a expertly crafted episode about Selma choosing not to have a relationship when it could affect a child over.
I suppose.
So there's a new number 15. It's 22 short films about Springfield. And largely I put it that high just because of that Skinner and Chalmers scene. Because that thing is spectacular. If we were ranking like 2 minute bits of The Simpsons versus whole episodes, Skinner versus Chalmers, Steam Hams might be number one. But it's episodes, and we're not doing bits. Still number one is Cape Fear. Last on our list at number 140 is Homer's Odyssey.
It will be someday
supplanted at some point, not too far in the future, honestly. Probably a year, I would say. Maybe a year and a half, 2 years. It'll be done. You know what our next episode is, Matt?
I do not.
It is Raging Abe Simpson and his grumbling grandson in The Curse of the Flying Hellfish.
Man, this season just does not let up, does it?
It's really good. It's a really good season. That's a spectacular episode. I'm very excited to talk about it. You can find this list, the best episode ever list, at our website, thesimpsonshow.com. Links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, whenever it's not malfunctioning, and links to every episode downloadable and streaming, to our Patreon if you want to help us keep the show going. We really appreciate it. If you think we are The Simpsons, please do not email us complaining about the contents of a 6-year-old episode.
Indeed. Also, don't send us your spec scripts. We already have enough of our own.
No one sends me spec scripts. I do get that they're not people listening to this show who are the ones sending me the emails, but I do get multiple emails, people asking me for stickers and people asking me to not be so offensive towards our troops.
Okay.
We're not The Simpsons, and two, I don't think The Simpsons really have done anything super negative about the armed forces.
No.
Whatever. That's why I turned off the contact form on our website, because I got nonstop emails thinking that we are The Simpsons, even though right in the header it uses the word podcast. I don't know. Oh.
People don't know what that means.
Also asking people, can I be on your show? No, I'm not The Simpsons, so I can't. And they will say no too. They will not let you. They're not going to answer. They're not just going to say yes. That'll wrap us up. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. MixmasterCereal. Please check out my other podcasts, The Handsome Boys Comics Hour. It's about comic books, and The Serial Fanaticist, which is about general nerdy things I find interesting. Matt does not participate in social media Well, unless you insult him, then maybe the siren call will make him read. Unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That's true. However, it is that time of year again where it is time for me to hibernate. So I will be outside digging a hole and stuffing myself with food so that I can last the winter away. So if you're, you know, you found some random caves, it's full of something that, you know, groans a lot. It's either me or a bear. So, you know, take your chances.
This is the part of the year where you stuff yourself with food?
Mm-hmm.
Not the other parts?
Well, when I do it and other people don't, because the other parts of the year, everyone's doing it, so I'm not unique.
You are unique, Matt. You're a special snowflake.
That's probably true.
That is very true. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching those episodes.
Shh.